Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
When I was about 10, there was a hockey tournament in our local arena, and one of the players on the team was the son of my dad's cousin. They lived about 4 hours away from us, but they traveled to our town for the tournament. While they were in town, they stayed at our house, so I got to know them a little better. And being a 10-year-old girl, maybe I had a little girl crush on the older hockey player that was staying at our house. So they were playing all weekend in the tournament, and on the Saturday evening, the team of our guests were playing the home team. The Bay Arena Rovers, from what I remember, was the name of the team. And I decided that I was going to go to the game that night, but my parents weren't going. So I went along with our guests who were staying at our house. So because I went with them, I ended up sitting with them. And so that was fine until the goals began to start getting scored. Because all of a sudden, I found myself in a bit of an awkward situation. The goals were being scored, and all the people around me for the opposing team were standing and cheering. It's like, so do I sit here or do I stand? And then all of a sudden, the goals would be scored for the home team, my team. It's like, do I stand by myself or do I just sit here and begrudge with the other team? So I was in a bit of an uncomfortable situation. As Christ followers, we often find ourselves standing in the middle of a situation where we know it's right to do one thing, but because of our circumstances, it would be so much easier to go with the opposing team. So what do we do? This month, it's these types of choices that we've been talking about as we've considered how we can live as Christ followers in a world that is so anti-Christian. Before we continue, there's a couple of things that I need to remind you of today. First of all, welcome. It's so good to have you all with us today. And if this is your first time with us, we want to say extra welcome to you. This is your first time with us, or maybe you've been coming for a few weeks, but you haven't officially connected with us yet. Well, there's a couple of ways you can do that. You can pull out your phone right now, and you can type in crosslands.live that you see on the screen. And there's a section called Get Connected. Click on that. You can fill out your information, and we can connect with you and let you know a little more about our church. If you're not so tech savvy, we have these as well. You'll find these at the back of this theater or outside any of our other theaters, and you can fill that out and pass it in at the information center. You also may have noticed that we didn't pass a plate or a bucket or anything today for you to put any money in. We didn't ask you to do that. We don't want to pressure you to do that, but some of you have come today and you're prepared to give. So there's several ways that you can do that, and they're listed on the screen. If you have an envelope with some money or a check, you can put that in the slots in the outside of this theater or at the info desk. And then there's debit or credit, and then there's online giving or text giving. So we've kind of given you all the options so that you can do that. Also, my number is on the screen. If you have any questions relating to this message, you can feel free to text, and I'm not sure if there's going to be time at the end of the service, but if there is, we'll take a look at those and try and answer those for you. So today is week 4 of our series that we've been doing. Pastor Fred started it off before he went on vacation, and Strangers in a Strange Land. So this week we're going to be looking at Daniel chapter 4, which tells us about the dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had. And this is the second dream that's recorded for the king. The first one was the dream that Pastor Wade talked about a couple of weeks ago. Do you guys remember when he spoke the sermon and he repeated the phrase, God is in control of who is in control? Do you guys remember that? Good. If you weren't here, it's available on our podcast. Go to crosslands.live and you can find it there. Daniel 4 starts out with King Nebuchadnezzar sending a message and proclaiming the miracles that God had done for him. He says, how great are the signs, how powerful his wonders. His kingdom will last forever, his rule through all generations. So the king was still happy and he was praising God he was so grateful that God had rescued Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from the fiery furnace. And if you remember, that was the message that Pastor Mariah spoke to us last Sunday. This is not the first time that Nebuchadnezzar was seen praising God, though. He did it earlier when Daniel interpreted the first dream for him. Then right after that, he decided, well, I'm going to build a gold statue, and you know what? All of you are going to have to bow down and worship me, because I am, oh, great King Nebuchadnezzar. Later in chapter 3, after God rescued the Hebrew boys, and the king declared that no one should speak a word against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because no other God can rescue like that. So what I'm seeing here is that King Nebuchadnezzar, he seems to be kind of going back and forth, between determining that God is great and I am great. On the one hand, we see him displaying moments of pride, and on the other hand, he's humbled at the greatness of God. So this is where we find Nebuchadnezzar when he dreamed the second dream. As he did before, he called all the wise men of Babylon and asked them what his dream meant. They couldn't interpret the dream for him, so Daniel came to hear the dream. And even though Daniel was the one who had interpreted the first dream, it was kind of political back then, and the king still had to call in all the wise men and see if they could interpret it first. But eventually they asked Daniel to come and do it, even though he was kind of still considered the outsider because he was an exiled Jewish man. So here's the dream in Nebuchadnezzar's own words. And if you want to follow along, you can look at Daniel 4, starting at verse 10. And I'm going to be reading from the New Living Translation. I saw a large tree in the middle of the earth. The tree grew very tall and strong, reaching high into the heavens for all the world to see. It had fresh green leaves, and it was loaded with fruit for all to see, to eat. Wild animals lived in its shade, and birds nested in its branches. All the world was fed from this tree. Then, as I laid there dreaming, I saw a messenger, a holy one coming down from heaven. The messenger shouted, "Cut down the tree and lop off the branches. Shake off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Chase the wild animals from its shade and the birds from its branches. But leave the stump and the roots in the ground, bound with a band of iron and bronze, and surrounded by tender grass. Now let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him live with wild animals among the plants of the field. For 7 periods of time, or for 7 years, let him have the mind of a wild animal instead of the mind of a human. For this has been decreed by the messengers. It is commanded by the Holy Ones, so that everyone may know that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world. He gives them to anyone he chooses, even to the lowliest of people." That's quite the dream for Daniel to interpret, don't you think? And as he realizes the meaning of the dream, he's actually afraid to tell the king what it means. Because Daniel now has to tell the king, "You know what, King Nebuchadnezzar, that tree that was cut down, well, that's, I'm sorry to tell you, but that's you. That's what the dream, that's what it means for you. You will be driven from human society, and you will live in the fields with the wild animals. You will eat grass like a cow, and you will be drenched with the dew of heaven. 7 years will pass by while you live that way, until you learn that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world and gives them to anyone he chooses. But the stump and roots of the tree were left in the ground. This means that you will receive your kingdom back again when you have learned that heaven rules." Then Daniel gives the king a warning. "King Nebuchadnezzar, please accept my advice. Stop sinning and do what's right. Stop doing the wrong things that you've been doing and do what's right. Break from your wicked past and be merciful to the poor. Perhaps then you will continue to be prosper." Well, obviously the king didn't listen, because just 1 year later he was out and he was strolling across the rooftop and he's looking over Babylon and he's like, "Oh, great Babylon, this is my land and I have done all this and I'm the ruler over all these things. Look what I have done." The king was once again putting himself on a pedestal. He was so full of pride. That's a different message than the one that we started out the message with. It seems that all of a sudden he decided that I am great and God is not. It's at that moment that he heard a voice reminding him of his dream 1 year ago. "You are no longer ruler of this kingdom." So with an hour of being reminded of his dream, this is what happened. And we've got a picture of it. Nebuchadnezzar went from being a king on his throne, with all honor and glory to him, he went from that to this photo. Looking like a wild animal, it says he was driven from human society. He ate grass like a cow. He was drenched with the dew of heaven. His hair became as long as eagle's feathers, and his nails were like bird's claws. Pretty ugly, isn't it? Some say that during this time, Nebuchadnezzar had a psychological disorder called boanthropy, which caused him to behave like an ox or a cow. And according to the Bible, it describes him as being insane. Boanthropy still occurs today when a person in a delusional state believes himself or herself to be an ox or a cow and attempts to live and behave accordingly. Some say that sufferers of this disorder began by becoming vegetarians. Then they started mooing uncontrollably. And then they eventually find themselves in a field acquiring a taste for grass. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen to you because you're a vegetarian. After the seven-year period had ended, Nebuchadnezzar's sanity returned, and he began to praise and worship the Lord, and he was restored to his kingdom with even greater honor than before. I find the last verse of the chapter most interesting. It says, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and glorify and honor the King of heaven. His acts are just and true, and he is able to humble the proud." Well, finally, Nebuchadnezzar realizes that his pride is what's caused his downfall. It is his pride that held him back. The very thing that he tried to do to make himself great is actually what brought him to a place of humiliation. So which is it? I am great, or God is great? Well, it seems that Nebuchadnezzar finally realized that he should have kept saying, "God is great." I think that there's some things that he could have done to prevent his pride from getting the better of him. He could have listened to the warning signs, first of all. God oftentimes brings people into our lives to warn us of something. There was a turtle one time who wanted to spend the winter in Florida, but he knew he could never walk that far. So he convinced a couple of geese to help him get there. So each one taking the end of a piece of rope, and then the turtle clamped his jaws on, and you can see it on the picture there. As they were leaving, the geese warned the turtle, "Don't talk or you will fall." Well, the flight went fine until someone on the ground looked up in admiration and said, "Well, who in the world thought of that?" And then, unable to resist, the turtle said, "I did. Ah!" You know what happened. When Daniel was interpreting the dream for Nebuchadnezzar, he warned him right there and then. He told him, stop living the wrong way he was living and do what is right. He narrowed that down even farther, and he said, break free from your wicked past and be merciful to the poor. Perhaps then you will prosper. If only Nebuchadnezzar had listened to that warning. Right then and there, he could have left his pride behind, and he could have looked to the concerns of others above himself. But he didn't. In spite of his acknowledgement of God's greatness, he wanted his own greatness to be known more. Nebuchadnezzar could have learned to be humble. And that's the second thing that we can do to prevent our pride from getting the best of us. We can learn to be humble. Nebuchadnezzar was a proud king, and he really did acknowledge the greatness of God because of the miracles he saw displayed through Daniel and his friends. But for the most part, he let his pride and his desire for greatness win. So why was it so hard for Nebuchadnezzar to be humble? Maybe he thought that by being humble, he would lose his power. And today we see the same thing. I hear stories from my friends all the time of how people in their companies, they just want to get ahead, and they're just fighting with people, and they're just got their head in the air, and they don't care who they're cutting down in the process. All they want to do is to just get ahead and get to the next promotion. And do you know what? I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with wanting to get ahead and wanting to get the next promotion or the next bonus, because I think when we think of being humble, we sometimes assume that we'll never get ahead, that we need to lower our standards, and that we always will be seen as a lesser person. But I think that's why many of us find it a little difficult, because truthfully, God has given us a determination, and he's given us some gifts that we have that We just have this desire to be able to make the world a better place. And so I think oftentimes we confuse humbleness with humiliation. And in this story, that's what we see happen to Nebuchadnezzar. He was so full of pride, and instead of humbling himself, he actually became humiliated. He chose his own greatness over God's greatness. So if we look at humility by God's standards, it's actually much different than our definition today. What humility is, what biblical humility is not, I don't think it means that you're a pushover. So it doesn't mean that people have the right to trample all over you. It doesn't mean that just because you're humble, you have to stand back and watch everyone else move forward in their careers and get bonuses and increases. It doesn't mean that you're insecure. It doesn't mean that people have to look at you as someone who's just standing back in the background, afraid to get involved and do something. No, but so what does it mean? What does biblical humility mean? Well, there's a few verses here, and one of them actually Pastor Wade referred to earlier when we were talking about the children. In Matthew 18 and 4, it says, anyone who becomes as humble as a little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. As we saw before, the little children are pretty innocent and humble, even though they sometimes weasel themselves and try to get their own way. But overall, they're pretty innocent and humble. And then in Matthew 12, verses 17 to 20, this verse is describing Jesus as being humble. It says, he will not fight or shout or raise his voice in public. He will not crush the weakest reed. He will cause justice to be victorious. So it would seem that biblical humility involves a few things. One of them is that I don't need to be seen for the good things that I've done. If you're known and you're put on a pedestal, as we just said, I think that's fine. The question is, did you put yourself there, or did you humble yourself and get there that way? Did you stop saying that I am great and instead say God is great? I can tell you stories of people in their companies who've made millions of dollars, and you know what? You would never know it. They look the same as everybody else. And they give money to churches and to other charities, and they never tell people about it. It's between them and the bookkeeper. And I think that that's a sign of humbleness. Having humility can actually help you in the workplace because you are not thinking about how to get ahead yourself. You're actually freeing your time and resources to be able to look at how I can best serve my workplace and how I can help those around me so that they will succeed and help the team. And maybe you're saying, well, I don't work outside my home, or I don't work with other people. Well, how can you help those around you, your family or the people that you see every day? Just stop and think about that. How can you use your resources to help us all work together as a team? Secondly, I think that humility means looking after those who are not able to look after themselves. And one of the first things that Jesus told us to do is to look after children, orphans, widows, and the poor. And you wonder, well, how can I do that in a practical way? Well, I'm glad you asked. Every Saturday night, right next door in the annex, we serve a community dinner. We serve it to people who are either homeless or in a low-income situation. Why not volunteer your time for that? Or if you don't have the time to come on a Saturday, maybe you would like to donate funds so that the meal can go ahead and be prepared. Or how about volunteering in our kids' ministry, like we just spent some time talking about? So will that make me humble, you ask? Well, if you do it to bring honor to God, then yes. But if you do it to only feel good about yourself, then probably not. So the third thing is helping justice to rule. There are a lot of injustices in our world, and perhaps one of the most horrible ones I can think of is human trafficking. Perhaps there's some way that you can be involved in helping to free young girls from human trafficking or help in the prevention of that. There's many other injustices that maybe you're thinking of that you hear on the news every day, and maybe there's other things in our community that you can be involved in to help with that. The fourth thing is to express gratitude. So if we stop and think of all the things we're thankful for, That in itself is going to keep us humble, I think. I'm going to give you a challenge. Why don't you, when you go home, take a notebook, or on your way home, buy a notebook, or pull out the notes on your phone, and every night, or maybe you're putting it in your desk at work and you're pulling it out every day, and just write down, have 5 minutes, and just write down things that I'm grateful for today. I challenge you to do that for a month. And then at the end of the month, look back and see all the things that you were grateful for this month. And I can pretty much guarantee that that's going to make you humble when you look at that. One of the greatest qualities that you can possess is to be humble. James 4 and 10 tells us, "Humble yourself before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor." Now, I don't know if I have any text messages, and I think that we're actually at a time today. So if there are some, I will text you back after the service. And or we'll post them on the Facebook page. I don't know where you find yourself today. We all have a choice to make, to remain prideful or to live a life of humility, to get ahead on my own terms or to put God first and to allow him to help you get ahead, to say, "I am great," or today, I challenge you, say, "God is great." So there's a light at the end of this story for Nebuchadnezzar. He tells us that his sanity was restored and his kingdom was restored to him, even more so than before. God is a God of putting together the messed up pieces of our lives. And if you've been brought low either because of something you've done to yourself or because of something that somebody else has done to you, maybe there's been an injustice done to you, God is here to restore you today. God is here to pick up the broken pieces and help you to rise to a place of honor once again. Jesus showed us the greatest example of humility when he died on the cross to bring salvation to the whole world. There was not a prideful bone in his body. And maybe you've never looked to God before. Well, around here we like to say it's as easy as ABC. And I'm going to tell you what that means. A, admit. Admit that, yeah, I've done some wrong things in my life, and I'm sorry for that. And then B, believe that Jesus came to this earth to die for all those wrong things that you've done. And you may say, "Really? Like, but I have so much going on. My life is so messed up." Well, Jesus did come, and he actually died on a cross so that you could receive life if you accept him. And the third thing is C, commit. You have to make that third step. You have to actually say, "Yes, Jesus, I believe that you followed me. And God, I want to receive what you've done for me. I want to receive all that you have for me. So now today, I surrender my life to you. I give everything in my life to you. I'm coming to you today with all these messed up parts of my life. And Jesus, I want you to be Lord of my life. Jesus, I want to stop saying that I am great. And God, today, from this day forward, I want to say that you are great." If you decided to make that decision, don't keep it to yourself. Tell someone around you. If you want to go to crosslands.live, fill out the Get Connected card and let us know. Tell me if you see me in the lobby afterwards. We want to help you along in your journey. We don't want you to just make that decision today and then just leave here and not know what to do next. Right after we're finished here, this room is going to become a prayer room. And today the focus is going to be on humbling ourselves before God. So please stay, and it'll be about 15 minutes or so. And why not stay and talk to God about these things? And otherwise, if you want to go out in the lobby and share some other conversations, you can do that out there with people. So why don't we stand? Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you for being here today. Thank you that you are great, that you are the name above all names. Today we have been reminded that we need to get rid of the pride in our lives, and we need to declare that God is great. You have done great things in our lives, and that honor belongs to you. So forgive us for the pride that we have allowed into our lives in the past. Help us today to be humble, to find ways to help those who aren't able to help themselves. I pray that you would be lifted high. God, we commit our lives to you. Go with us today. Amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.